This is A View from Nicholas Street, presented by James Townsend.
Of all the countries in the world, there are only two which have developed systems of government based almost entirely on hearsay. Israel, which hopes that by avoiding any written form of constitution, it can open itself to divine oversight, and the United Kingdom. We just never got round to writing it all down. Many people, they tend to be Liberal Democrats, insist that this is a shocking state of affairs. Others see it as a surprisingly neat solution that allows our constitution to duck and to weave through even the messiest political situation. The people of the United States know well in advance when there's going to be an election. Hence, they can start preparing their campaigns, carefully taking position, often years ahead of polling day. What a long way Washington is from Westminster. Since the 2005 election, we have known that by law there had to be another vote before June the 7th, 2010. But that is all we have known, because the decision rests with the Prime Minister, who picks his own moment to ask the Queen for a dissolution of Parliament. So we all presumed that when Gordon Brown moved into Downing Street, we would have an election in the months immediately afterwards. I recall a number of my own conversations with ministers and their offices in the autumn of 2007. No, no, James, you don't understand. There is going to be an election. We're clearing the diaries for the campaign. Well, isn't politics a funny game? Just hours before Brown was scheduled to kick the whole thing off, something terrible happened. The Conservatives found themselves a policy. Just one policy, but it was a very good one. Inheritance tax would no longer be levied on estates under £1 million. Suddenly, a great swathe of people could see themselves being better off under a Conservative government. Not a great way for the Labour Party to start their campaign for that all-important fourth term. So there was no trip to the palace for Gordon Brown. The Queen was unvisited, and despite the pleas of the Conservative leader, there was no election. What a joy it will be for historians, journalists, and politicians of the future to agonise, discuss, and consider whether Gordon Brown would, after all, have been better off in 2007. There was no election, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't an election campaign. So instead we have had the longest campaign in living memory. Every policy announcement, every speech, every factory visit, every budget decision, every vote in the Commons, and every response to international events, everything has been in preparation for the election, whenever it comes. Well, on Tuesday, it came at last. We all knew it was coming. The media had been well briefed on what was going to happen. It may be tempting to dismiss as Victorian farce the British constitutional procedure of a Prime Minister taking the time to drive down the Mall and asking the Queen for an election. But it does need to be taken seriously by at least two people. The Queen will have been mindful of her great-grandfather's record on this. When Henry Campbell Bannerman wanted to renew his mandate with a general election in 1906, Edward VII was in Saint-Germain, just south of Paris. In those days, there was no royal helicopter to whisk the monarch back to London, and so the Prime Minister was compelled to make the journey himself. Just as, when the election returned the Liberal Party to government, the entire cabinet had to attend the King in person in Paris, so that they could be sworn into office without disturbing his holiday. Not for our Queen, a casual disregard for her duties as sovereign. Late last week, a telephone call was put through from Downing Street to Windsor. The Prime Minister requests an audience with Her Majesty. Might arrangements be made for Her Majesty to return to Buckingham Palace? And so the Royal Helicopter was pressed into service, and the two functions of the British Constitution, effective and dignified, could meet with the minimum of fuss. It seems, too, that Gordon Brown takes these peculiar meetings seriously. He is obviously mindful of his prime ministerial history and of the fate of the leading party figure who emerged as the obvious candidate to be invited by the King to form a new government. Unfortunately, the poor fellow held a principled objection to the telephone and refused to have one in the house. Consequently, as he sat waiting to be summoned, Buckingham Palace couldn't get through to him. Instead, a more technologically advanced colleague was offered the job in his place. So, the election is on. The polls suggest it is all to play for, and it will be played for. In the villages, towns, and cities across the country, right up to the very last. As our Prime Minister says in his characteristically overscripted way, let's get to it. At every election, we are told that this is a very important election. Now, I couldn't tell you whether this one will define our politics for a generation or not, but even my limited experience of general elections tells me that it is unique. The British have always held their politics, and of course their politicians, in a healthy, low regard. But faith in our system and its personnel has never been so low as it is today. In our daily existence, we can all see a level of frustration and disappointment with the Labour Party. We are yet to see this turn into an affection for the Conservatives. The great danger is that turnout will drop even further at this election, and whatever party forms a government, their mandate will be weakened as a result. Even political anoraks like me have had their confidence in politics knocked over the past 18 months. Indeed, I struggle to identify what is at the centre of this election. Are we voting to choose between distinct visions of Britain in the 21st century? Are we voting to approve or reject the record of a Labour government? Are we voting to rate the perceived personal competence of certain individuals? Well, perhaps we have to go back to the basics and ask, what is a general election supposed to do for us? The answer is to make change happen. On the other side of the Atlantic, change is built into their constitution. A president cannot be elected for more than two terms, and even a single-term presidency will have its wings clipped by mid-term elections in Congress. Here, we have to rely on the electorate, and rely on them to get up off their sofas, put on their best hat, and march off to the polling station to say, enough is enough. Just a few days into the official 2010 campaign, and the mood of the country is becoming clear. The whole country, even perhaps the Labour Party, has become tired of a Labour government. But they are distinctly uncomfortable about the prospects of a Conservative government. Luckily, our system is engineered for just such a situation. the slightest flicker of a swingometer, and Labour will be out of the running. And yet, if David Cameron wants a working majority in the Commons, he must make a Herculean impression on the voters. Not very long ago, I found myself in a local junk shop. Lurking behind a rather ghastly collection of cushions was an image of a door that I recognised. Pushing aside the offending soft furnishings, I revealed the whole picture. A wooded square, with a great church in profile to one side, and a facade to the other. It was not a place I could identify, but the door was definitely one I knew. Not being satisfied to leave the enigma unresolved, I bought the picture and took it home, and there it has remained until just the other day, when a solution hit me. I was looking at Parliament Square in Westminster. Crucially, though, it was depicted in 1825, before the fire of 1834, and before the erection of the great parliamentary palace that we know today. Only one thing remains to be recognised, the looming north front of Westminster Hall and its highly recognisable door. So much else at Westminster has changed since then, and in the same way the politics of 1825 were very different to those of today. The progress we have made since then has happened through elections, through a system that ultimately, whether we like it or not, gives us what we want. Our peculiar system may be based on stuffy meetings with the Queen and interminable election campaigns, but it is actually very good at giving us what we want. In the coming days and weeks, it is our duty to decide, what do we want from these elections?
That was A View from Nicholas Street, written and presented by James Townsend. For more episodes, visit jamestownsend.org.